Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, filmmaker John Pilger shows what's really going on with U.S. policy with North Korea, China, and Russia, and why Hillary Clinton lost the election. I hope you'll stay tuned. Two voices, apart from my own, grace New World Notes today. The deeper voice, with the Australian accent, belongs to the documentary filmmaker John Pilger. Pilger has been a consistent and effective critic of U.S., British, and Australian policy, and the ruling elites that the policy serves. So, don't look for his films on American public TV, let alone commercial TV. In fact, his films are shown extensively on British and Australian TV, where diversity of opinion and occasional criticism of government policy is still permitted in the media, unlike here. Someone suggested that we should give our First Amendment to England. They don't have one, and after all, we're not using ours for anything. Today, Pilger focuses on U.S. foreign policy, which leads, naturally enough, to a discussion of Mr. Trump, Mrs. Clinton, and the 2016 presidential election. Spoiler alert, Pilger sees both candidates as loyal servants of the ruling class, anti-democratic to the core, with Hillary Clinton being the more dangerous of the two. I'm bound to say I quite agree. Pilger is interviewed by Cindy Sheehan. You may recall her as the mother of a U.S. soldier killed in our Iraq War in 2004. That turned Cindy into a peace activist. Over the years, her perspective broadened. She came to understand that the fight for peace requires a fight against injustice and inequality of several kinds. Sheehan is a good interviewer. That is, she has enough sense to give Pilger a good prompt, then get out of the way and let him talk for several minutes. Supposedly, she's interviewing him about his latest documentary film, The Coming War on China. In fact, Pilger gives a wide-ranging talk about China, North Korea, Russia, the Middle East, the 1%, and the corruption of Hillary Clinton. Speaking on May 23, 2017, here is John Pilger.
Well, you say you grew up, so did I, during the first Cold War. I mean, we're back into another Cold War. It's not exactly the same, but it feels like that at times. And the two principal adversaries during the Cold War, manufactured adversaries, were Russia and China. China is rather difficult for the United States to present as a total enemy, whereas Russia is always in American demonology and mythology being the enemy. It's not the enemy, of course, but it's easier to demonize. Whereas China is America's biggest trading partner. China has also risen to become the world's second biggest economic power. And what really bothers the United States is not that the Chinese are about to attack the U.S. or unleash a war against the U.S., but that its economic power is challenging that of the U.S., the dominance of the U.S. And so the United States has really devoted much of its long-term strategic thinking to attempting to constrain China. There are 400 U.S. bases encircling China.
Right.
one of the most secretive and biggest bases in the world is in the Marshall Islands in the Pacific. It was set up in 1968 to combat Red China, and it's now a Star Wars base, and most of its configuration is at China. Now, it's not meaning to suggest that China and the United States are about to go to war, but it does present us with a situation that we saw a great deal during the first Cold War, and that is an atmosphere is created of suspicion and misinformation between nuclear powers. And that means that war and nuclear war can break out by mistake or accident. It's very interesting at the moment with Trump because there's a seesaw going on. One moment somebody is an enemy, the next moment they're a friend.
Right.
There's Donald Trump sitting down to dinner with President Xi of China, enjoying the presidential chocolate cake while he tells him that he's fired 50-odd Tomahawk missiles at Syria, that was clearly meant to demonstrate that the United States is still the top dog as far as military power is concerned. I'm sure President Xi took the message. So the Cold War is not as black and white as it appeared to us back in the 1950s and 60s and 70s into the 80s. It's much more of perceived threats that really are transcendent. I mean, it's what is this all about? It's about the United States losing its position as the tough guy on the block, not in terms of military power, but in terms of economic power. China is looking behind it through Eurasia. It's just conducted an extraordinary conference in which it's laid out plans for something like $900 billion worth of development along its old Silk Road, so mass transit to Europe, so that it can trade across the great steppes and the continent of Europe. This is all very 21st century. It's about development. It's about countries flexing their economic muscles. It makes the United States seem almost 19th century, they don't wear the pith helmets.
Right.
It's rattling at sabers. But that presents us with great dangers. Now, Trump has just been in the Middle East. Trump is still in the Middle East. He's now, as we speak, I think, in Israel. But his really unctuous speech in Saudi Arabia to one of the world's most primitive regimes was really about carving out America's territory all over again, of reminding the world and reminding China, of reminding this great economic power that depends on the Middle East for most of its oil, as do the other countries of Asia. He was saying to the world, particularly to China, this is our patch. Come and get the oil, but don't interfere here. So these kind of grand gestures are going on at the moment. But again, they bring with them very considerable risk, because always when there are military forces involved and nuclear military forces, that means danger. As we've seen in the tragedies in Iraq and in Afghanistan, the violence that we've seen already in this century, this new century, have been really about posturing.
Right. Well, let's talk about recently the tension that Trump has escalated all around North Korea. I believe, and I'm sure that is more a posturing towards China.
Yeah. Well, you know, North Korea is a, quote, problem, unquote, that could have been solved a long time ago, such as the way we're trained to perceive other societies, it's meant to be some particularly insane, deranged society. It's nothing of the kind. It has a very closeted regime, but there's no question that, in my mind anyway, that North Korea would have been attacked by the United States had it not possessed nuclear weapons. That point has been made very clearly by the fact that it hasn't been attacked. What North Korea wants is a peace treaty for a war that ended in 1953, a war in which all its major cities were razed to the ground by the United States. There's never been anything like it, and that includes the Second World War. North Korea was absolutely obliterated, and yet it was North Korea that opposed the Japanese, the Koreans in the North, that is, who opposed the Japanese during the Second World War. And so North Korea is a country that actually is almost begging for peace. A peace treaty with North Korea would end this standoff between the United States and the regime in Pyongyang. It would almost certainly bring together North and South Korea. Now, the Clinton administration did negotiate with the North Koreans on nuclear power, on nuclear development. North Korea agreed to stop processing plutonium. And this was going along a very positive route until George W. Bush came into power right. and stopped it. And the bad guy was back on the block. North Korea was the demon again. Trump has made him the demon again. Of course, if there was a peace treaty, which is all North Korea wants, that would mean there'd be no need for 50,000 U.S. troops along the 38th parallel in Korea. And that's what all this is about. There's always a kind of, Cindy, there's always an official truth and an unofficial truth. That's the unofficial truth. A peace treaty would mean that America would have to get out of Korea. But it would make the rest of the world, and especially Korea, a much safer place. And as you rightly point out, much of this is aimed at China. The U.S. has installed in South Korea, its sort of vassal state, what is called a THAAD anti-nuclear defense system, which is in fact just a series of missiles that can destroy China's defenses before it has an opportunity to defend itself. So it's very aggressive. It's a very aggressive thing to do, and it's right on China's doorstep. The background to North Korea and this threat to China is really very, very important to understand, and it's something about which there's almost a willful ignorance.
Try talking about North Korea, Russia, China, Syria. Try talking about Syria. And recently, the United States, the State Department just accused Assad of having crematoriums. Then they had to say, oh, well, that wasn't right. But once you accuse Assad of having crematoriums, that's all the people remember.
That's right. It's very interesting because it's what I would call a propaganda blitz.
Mm-hmm.
So if you blitz a subject, let's say Syria has crematoria, Syria has used chemical weapons against its own people, Syria has slaughtered several hundred thousand people. If you keep up this monologue, this monotone of misinformation, of half-truths, no one is suggesting, of course, that the Syrian government is a pleasant regime, but you never hear that it is probably the protector of the most multi-ethnic society in the Middle East, a society that would be obliterated if the fanatics of ISIS and al-Nusra and al-Qaeda, which are backed by the United States, directly and indirectly were allowed to take over Syria. The propaganda blitz is to suggest this is a uniquely evil government in the way, as we've just been talking about, the propaganda blitz is to present North Korea as deranged, as mad. Here's a bit of his particular human insanity is concentrated here and there. It's a kind of use of propaganda that allows no dissent. And what really has happened in free countries in the West in recent years is the diminishing of dissent, of real dissent. There are very few mainstream media outlets that would have the kind of conversation we are having now. It is slogans. It is this propaganda blitz. The Russians invaded Ukraine. Well, no, they didn't, actually. But that's propaganda blitz, and so on and so forth.
Well, like here in the U.S., it's just accepted. Now it's just an accepted truth that Russia hacked the U.S. elections to install Donald Trump in favor of Donald Trump. And that's like the only reason Hillary Clinton lost is because Russia, Russia, Russia. It's just repeated like it's just like you were talking about. It's just the truth. Because you know what? 16 intelligence agencies in the United States said it was so. And we both know that those intelligence agencies have never lied. So talk about that, because I think this leads into Julian Assange and how he had always said it wasn't a hack, it was a leak.
Yeah, well, it's the best example, Cindy, because it reminds me of, you know, was it before the Second World War, there was a famous radio broadcast by Orson Welles in which he read from H.G. Wells' The War of the Worlds. I think I may have this right. But he did it so effectively that he frightened everybody, frightened the nation. And I don't know, was it Roosevelt had to comment on it or something? My knowledge peters out there. But it caused something of a national panic. Well, that the Russians are coming, or the Russians have given us Donald Trump. We hate Donald Trump, A. B, that's because the Russians did it. They interfered. All this is nonsense, beginning to end. The 16 agencies produced not a shred of proof. They used the words, I believe, it is in our opinion, and so on. They used a kind of sophistry. Anybody reading their reports, so-called reports, would see they have no evidence. And that's really a shocking indictment of, first of all, the media, but I have to say of people who accept that as well. You talked about your compatriots there accepting that Russia had interfered. It's the kind of pre-Enlightenment ignorance that great religious power relied upon. And it's willful. That's the point. It's imposed. Of course, the unofficial truth is that the United States has actively interfered in the Russian electoral process since the end of the Soviet Union, and all but installed their own man in the Kremlin, Boris Yeltsin. And the reason that Vladimir Putin is demonized is that he and his government, for all its failings, he and his government have given back a dignity and a pride and a nationalism to Russia, and Russia is now independent. And really this comes back to all these countries, North Korea, China, Iran, Russia, and the others, not a terribly long list, their crimes are that they are independent. Independent, and that's intolerable. So this nonsense about Russia blaming Hillary Clinton. I mean, Hillary Clinton, if Hillary Clinton had been elected, it is my view that it wouldn't just be Donald Trump's 59 missiles fired at Syria, there'd be a whole shooting war on firing at another country.
Right.
She presented a much greater threat than Trump ever did. And yet to say that, particularly on liberal circles, I wrote an article which truthout.com refused to publish because they comment, it was inaccurate because I'd drawn an equivalence between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Well, in many aspects, there was an equivalence, and there is an equivalence. In fact, I would say that on their records alone, Hillary Clinton was by far the most aggressive and potentially dangerous president, much more so than Trump. Now, that is anathema. That's almost something that just shouldn't be spoken. And this whole idea of the Russians stopping Hillary Clinton, a candidate who abused the electorate, called people, irredeemables.
Deplorables.
Deplorables, yes. Sorry. Deplorables, and abused the people that she was expecting would vote for her. So that's propaganda. That's a propaganda blitz. The Russia is responsible for Hillary Clinton's defeat is a propaganda blitz. Probably the most perfect example of it.
There's much evidence that the Democratic National Committee colluded with each other and with the corporate media in the United States to throw the election to her. And there was much evidence that the other candidate that was running against her, Bernie Sanders, was cheated out of the nomination. And that brings us to Julian Assange and the leaked emails.
Well, yes. Last October, I interviewed Julian, and I asked him about the leaked emails, the Clinton emails. And I put it to him, did they come from Russia? And his answer was they did not come from Russia. And I know that they did not come from Russia. And there's no evidence that they came from Russia. Almost certainly they came from within the Democratic National Committee, though I can't confirm that.
Right.
But what these emails did was cast a really glaring light on Hillary Clinton. Here was, as Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton was doing deals with the Saudis and the Qataris and the other Gulf states, doing arms deals with them while the Gulf states were donating, so-called, giving money to the Clinton Foundation, and which would, of course, be money for the Clinton campaign. And in one of these, the Podesta emails, named after John Podesta, from John Podesta, of course, her early campaign manager, had said, that makes clear that she was supporting these Gulf states knowing how much they were underwriting ISIS. So the focal point of terrorism, so-called, in the Middle East was being underwritten by the allies of Hillary Clinton, who made her a beneficiary of their great wealth. That was really the story about all those emails. It was extraordinary corruption on many levels. Now, I don't think that, because it wasn't known across the United States, would have caused her political demise. She certainly contributed mostly to that. But that was Hillary Clinton, who was hoping to be the next president of the United States.
Well, she also skipped campaigning in what they call in the United States the Rust Belt, where Donald Trump did very well. And to me, looking at it, it was because of Russia or whatever. It was because people needed jobs. They felt like they had lost their security. And not only that, but they saw rightly so, saw Hillary Clinton as part of the problem, as part of the establishment that brought us here.
Well, they analyzed it correctly. The Democrats, the people who have masqueraded for many years as representing ordinary people in the United States, were in fact not. On the contrary, they were representing the interests that opposed ordinary people in the United States. And that, I mean, we know that. That was true of Obama, and it was true of the Bill Clinton administration. But it was probably more true of Hillary Clinton, that she represented these hugely powerful interests. She represented an elite at a time when I think most people, for all the misinformation that they have to deal with, understood very clearly, and this is true in Europe, but certainly true in this country, in Britain and other countries, that their problems lay with this hierarchy of politics, that it was the elite, an elite, the so-called 1%, if you like, protecting these elite interests that were their real political and social adversaries. She was the embodiment of that.
Oh, yeah, clearly, obviously. Just tell the listeners how they can get more information about your film and about your writings.
Okay, thank you. Well, my website, www.johnpilger.com, has all but two of the 60 documentary films I've made available free to watch. So that's a resource I think that many of your listeners will be interested in. It doesn't have yet my latest film, The Coming War on China, but that's available in the United States through Bullfrog Films. They have a website. I think it's bullfrogfilms.com. Film is available from there. So due to the wonders of the internet, all these things are online. Very nice speaking to you, Cindy.
Well, thank you, John.
Always an honor and always a pleasure.
A fascinating discussion of the truth behind American foreign policy. And a reminder about President Trump. Lacking though he may be in judgment, knowledge, wit, and taste, he's pretty much correct about fake news. Or, as Pilger calls it, the propaganda blitz. With that cheerful thought, I bid you adieu. Thanks to The People Speak with Cindy Sheehan for the audio, which I have edited for New World Notes. Find an archive of our programs on the web at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening, advising illegitimi non carborundum, and hoping you'll tune in again next week. Till then.